Hi, and welcome to Art and Inspiration here on Radio St. Pete. I'm your host, Brenda McMahon, ceramic artist and owner of Brenda McMahon Gallery in Gulfport, Florida. This week, we are talking to one of the more accomplished artists in our area, who is known far and wide for her private residential murals and by her list of extraordinary clients, but she's lesser known to the general public, and we're hoping to change that today. Artist Judith Villavicenas is a painter and a muralist. She's a Florida native and has been a professional mural painter since 1983. Some of her many clients include the Lee Whedon Memorial Library, the Columbia Restaurant Group, and John Travolta. Judith has spent decades on scaffolding, transforming ceilings into museum-quality artworks, and she joins us here today. Judith, welcome.
Thank you, Brenda. It's nice to be here.
It's nice to have you. So this is Art and Inspiration, and I kind of wanted to start because I'm intrigued with how artists create a life for themselves and a path to success. And you have a really unusual one. You do spend much of your career has been in private homes doing residential murals. So tell us a little bit about the overview of how you started and how you got to where you are today.
Well, I've always loved the arts, and I've always loved doing what I do. Then starting the murals kind of fell on my lap in a very unusual way. And years ago, I was working for a company called Grand Events in Tampa. And I was their painter. I basically was a scenic painter. I painted backdrops for a lot of their theme parties for large corporations. And one day, the owner walked in, Yvette Nunez, and she asked me if I would be interested in painting a mural, a ceiling mural, to be specific. And it was a friend of hers, and she told her friend, well, I have an artist that I think could do practically anything. I'll ask her. So I went ahead and met with this customer, and I did the ceiling and another ceiling, and then after that, would have been in Hyde Park in Tampa, was my first mural, and it just snowballed. It just kept going and going, and then I did a lot of work for the Florida Orchestra show houses too, which really helped.
And they took old mansions and
yes, they would take exactly. They would take old mansions or old estates that were going to be on sale or were already on the market, and they would invite designers to come for this event, and they would take a room and then create and decorate that particular room. And two designers loved my work, had seen my work, and decided to ask me if I'd be interested in painting something in that show house. Well, I did, and I ended up doing about three or four more show houses after that, Florida Orchestra show houses.
And how long would a project like that regularly take you?
Oh, my gosh. Regularly, for some of that work, it would normally take me weeks, maybe month or two. In this case, you had a specific timeline, and you had to create whatever you were going to be doing for that show house. You had a deadline, and they were short. And so I would be working anywhere from 10 to 11, 12-hour days.
Wow, so that was rigorous work.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and then you would do projects in between the big mansion projects to string it along.
Right.
And so how many years have you been doing this private work? Is it 20-plus?
Oh, yes. I would say at least. I've been self-employed since 83, but the murals probably didn't start till the late 80s is when I started the murals.
Yeah, and it's fascinating to me that an artist can make a vital, successful life without doing any advertising, having to have a website or business cards. It's just that word of mouth is powerful.
Oh, very powerful. In fact, I think it's one of the best. And till this day, it's word of mouth.
That's right.
Which has been pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But the catalyst actually for me deciding to go on my own as an artist, and I was living in upstate New York for a while. And when I returned home, because my father was ill, was not doing well, I started working at Burns Steakhouse, and then at that time, in 1983, my father passed away. And when he passed away, it was like a light bulb going off in my head that, oh, your time here is finite.
Yeah.
And is this really what you want to be doing for the rest of your life instead of doing something that you really love?
Yeah.
And I took some money that my father had put in savings bonds for me,
mm-hmm.
and I cashed, as a child, and I cashed those in, and I bought a compressor and a drafting table and some other things. And I went off on my own and started freelancing and never looked back.
And you were telling me on our drive over here that your father was one of your biggest fans. He really believed in you.
Oh, yes, he did. Yeah. He worried about me,
mm-hmm.
like all parents would do when you tell them that when you're going to college, you want to be a fine arts major. He said, well, okay, but could you like take some other courses so to fall back on? And which I did, but... I didn't sway from what I really wanted to do in the end.
Well, that was a very nice parting gift from your father to get you started and to inspire all of us with your beautiful artworks. So one of the techniques that you're known for is a style of painting that's literally deceives the eye. And it's called, if I'm saying it correctly, trompe l'oeil.
Trompe l'oeil.
Tell us what that is.
Trompe l'oeil is French for to fool the eye. And all you have to do is fool the eye just for a moment. It's not, it's very highly representational, and it's based a lot on perspective and on shadows to create the illusion that something is really there when you paint something, and of course, two-dimensionally to make it look like it's three-dimension. And I happened to fall in love with it when I discovered trompe l'oeil. It has a lot of impact, and it's fun, and you can play with it.
Yeah.
It is something that has to be done to scale to be able to create that illusion. So that happens to be one of the things that I've done a lot of in most of my murals.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the murals in these homes, and so you'll paint what looks like a door you can walk through, and it is not there. It's a flat wall, but you feel like you can walk through that door and go to the garden further back.
Right.
Yeah.
There's been several instances where it's, I really enjoy when I know that it has worked. And I did a, years ago in Tierra Verde, there was a home I did in Tierra Verde, and I was working in this downstairs space that they had, and they had three Siamese cats, and they had asked me if there was any way I could incorporate the three Siamese cats into this mural. So I did.
Mm-hmm.
I put one at a window of a bait shop. It was all themed. They live right on the water, so it was themed very beachy, you know, Anyway, then I had one coming through a door that was ajar a little bit, and then I had another cat that looked like it was reaching for some bait that was on a fishing pole.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after I had completed the mural, they had a party to let everybody come into their new space that they had where I had painted this mural, and they called me up, and she said, you know, after the party, and she said, you would have been so amazed. She goes, our cat happened to come downstairs during the party, one of our cats, and saw the cat that was going through the door that you painted and stood there, froze, arched its back, and started hissing at that cat and was just not the happiest. So I guess if I could fool a cat, that's a good thing.
That's pretty darn good. There's a good audience for you.
Yeah.
Well, that's really good. That's fun. Animals always tell the truth, too. So there have been a lot of articles about you and your work, Judith, and I was reading one of them that you showed me by the Tampa Bay Times, entitled Fly Me to a Star.
Mm.
And tell us about that mural and that article.
All right, Fly Me to a Star was an article about the mural I painted for John Travolta. And this whole thing was just amazing how it came about. Talk about word of mouth. John Travolta had seen a piece that I had done for a friend of his, a mural, and he liked it. So he had someone get in touch with me. Well, this the person that got in touch with me called me up several times, different times, for a period of about 2 weeks, and would call up and ask me questions like, I know you're this artist, and I know you do work around here. Would you be willing to travel? And just asking general questions, short questions, and then that would be it. Well, about the third or fourth call, the person asked me, do you have any idea who my employer is? And at that point, I was kind of suspicious. My mother was the one who figured it out. Mm-hmm. I said, well, could it be John Travolta? And she says, yes, it is. Oh. And so she made an appointment. We made an appointment that I was to see him on a Friday night. And it was at 10:30 in the evening, which is very unusual. I don't make appointments with future clients or at that late. So I drove. It was in Clearwater. I drove to Clearwater that evening, still thinking it might be a hoax, that this really wasn't real. And when I get there, yes, it was John Travolta, and he spoke with me about doing this mural, and I ended up flying to, he flew me. The name of the article is Fly Me to a Star. He flew me on his jet, his G3, to Ocala, and it was very surreal. To be on a jet, and everything happened so quickly because it was from that Friday to Monday.
Where did he fly you?
I met him. They had a limo pick me up and take me to the executive airport in Clearwater, St. Pete, Clearwater Airport. And then from there, we flew to Ocala.
Which is the home. And he flew the plane.
Flew the plane.
And landed in his front yard.
What was so funny was I'm sitting in this plane that seats about 20 people, and I'm the only person in it. And the co-pilot, which I thought was the pilot, said to me, well, it's John's going to be boarding now. And John comes up into the plane and he says, hi, Judith. And then he goes into the cockpit, sits down, and takes over. And he was the actual person that flew the plane.
That is fabulous. That must have been so freaky for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was one of those pinch me moments.
Yeah, yeah. Was it intimidating to meet him?
Yes. I really appreciate people that I hold them in high esteem when they're, with what they do. And of course, he's done fabulous work in the movies and everything else. But I'm not one of those, I kept that pretty much in check. Hmm. I never felt really uncomfortable with him. He's very friendly. He's a friendly person.
And it sounded like he was intrigued by your process. And as you were painting, he would come in and check in on you and watch the painting.
Every day before he would leave and always leave. Get on his plane and take off in the evening to go back to Clearwater, he would always come in and check on me to see how I was doing and what the progress was for that day.
Yeah. And the mural was?
The mural was of a retro cocktail lounge in an airport. And so he wanted his wife and his two children in the mural, as well as himself. So I took color cues from the way it was in his dining room, and I took color cues from what was in his dining room to create that feeling. And actually, his furniture was also the furniture that was in that dining room. Actual furniture, I painted some of it into the mural.
Yeah, what colors were you using?
Aquas. They were very, very retro colors.
Yeah, retro.
Very Italian.
Yeah.
Retro.
Wow. Yeah. So that's a pretty exciting client to talk about. So since we're talking about the fun ones that everybody knows, is there a client or a proposition you had to paint a mural that was unusual?
Well, it is getting close to Halloween, so we might as well go with this. Yes. Years ago, while I was still living in Tampa, I met a a guy who was who actually wrote for the Tampa Tribune, and he had his own column. And he had asked me, he told me he had some friends that were very interested in creating a mural in their home, and might I be interested? And I said, yeah, sure. And he says, well, he says, they do live rather far out in the Lake Placid area of Florida. And he said, we could drive there one day and, you know, meet them. And I said, all right, that sounds good. So we're driving along, and this is, we're in Orange Grove District area, and we pull into an orange grove, and we follow it in and for a while. And in the middle of this orange grove is this ranch-style home, and there is a pen with, like, about 50 goats. And I thought, oh, okay, this is cool. This is a little unusual, but all right, no big deal. So when we go in the house, it's this older couple, very pleasant, very soft-spoken, nice people, and with lots and lots of cats. I don't think I've ever seen so many cats in one place. Well, that was a little bit odd, too, but I like cats. It didn't get much thought. Uh-huh. So as the conversation, they have this incredible collection of fossils, and especially scarabs, actual, you know, sculpted scarabs, beetle scarabs, and all kinds of very unusual things, which I was just amazed. It was like a museum. We started discussing the mural. He comes out, he says, excuse me, and he walks into another room, and he comes out with this metal tray, the kind that you have test tubes, people put test tubes in, mm-hmm. and they're filled with a red liquid, which turns out to be blood. And he looks at me and says, well, the mural I want done is in our living room, and I want you to paint the mural, the Tree of Life, but I need you to paint it with this blood. And all of a sudden, it's like things started going off in my head, like little red flags everywhere. And I said, oh, okay. And I'm thinking, oh, we better think quickly on this one. And I said, well, you know, blood is very organic, and it doesn't have a binder, and it will not stay on the wall per se. It will flake off. Mm. And he says, oh, I didn't realize that. And he says, well, you know, well, maybe you could do something for us in our other room.
Oh.
Take me to another room, and it is a ritual room.
Oh.
With an altar, with the cross, I mean the star, the pentagram, uh-huh. painted on the floor, all kinds of swords and knives and everything on
Whoa.
One wall. And what I was then I found out was they were sacrificed the goats.
Oh,
that was their sacrificial.
Stop.
Yeah. So my.
Oh my God!
At that time. all I could think of was,
how do I get out of here?
Because yeah. I had not driven there. I did have no idea. At that time, there were no cell phones.
Oh,
you have to
gosh.
Understand this. There were no cell phones. This was the 80s. And I was just thinking, how am I going to get home without, you know, offending these people and hopefully getting out as quickly as possible?
Well, you're here, so we know that.
Yes, I did. And that was just probably one of the times in my life where I realized from then on
wow.
that whenever I went to meet a client, I would let people know where I was.
Yes, very good. That's a very good policy.
Oh,
and I
yeah.
imagine you walked yourself out of that proposition and told them you had other plans.
Yeah. And they had lent me some books because they felt that they wanted me to really join this coven, this group that they belong to. And they lent me the books, and then I got phone calls saying that they wanted the books back when I didn't answer calls from the gentleman that had taken me there.
Yeah.
And then I got threats. that I was not to tell anybody about this, but I think enough years have gone by. And I haven't mentioned any names.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. So for all of you artists out there that go and do client visits, definitely tell people where you are. And now we have cell phones so we can call them. But that's that's an unnerving one indeed. Wowee.
Yeah. Now I look back on it, it's a good story. It's a fun story to tell, but at the time it was kind of,
That's scary. Well, I'm glad you had mostly good stories. Thanks for sharing that one. Perhaps this is a good segue because you've spent a lifetime and a career doing all of these wonderful residential, beautiful pastoral murals and cherubs and all sorts of incredible things. And then you have this other passion of political art. And that is one of the ways that I got to know your work a little bit. Tell us quickly about your passion for doing that sort of work.
Well, I've always been very interested in political art. In fact, even at a very young age, even at high school, when our teachers would ask for reports or whatever happened, you know, political science class or whatever, I would turn in political cartoons because I just loved them. And I really felt like I was quite good at it. And in fact, I never got any of them back because the teachers always asked if they could keep them.
Oh, cool.
So I wish I had some to show. It would be interesting, especially what was going on back then. So, political art is good in a way that it allows me to, it's kind of cathartic. It gets me away from what is happening, that when I'm very upset with what's happening. And I did a piece in 2020, that I, during the actual, the night of the election in 2020, when, and before the election was called, I was trying to complete the piece, and little did I know I would have more time to be able to continue the piece.
Yeah.
And it was called Incendiary Turbulence. Mm. I was very, very happy with that piece, and it was shown at the Arts Exchange in an exhibit. I'm trying to name the show.
Oh, that's okay. Well, now we've come full circle. I'll do a little bit of a plug for folks that want to see some of your more, one of your recent pieces, The Would-Be King Holds Court, is a piece that Judith Villavicencio submitted to our show at Brenda McMahon Gallery called We the People, and it is still on the wall, so they have at least a month to come and see your work in person, because mostly people can't see your work in person, but you are having a show in March at the Katherine Hickman Theater Gallery, is that correct?
True.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
And do you know the dates of that by chance?
No, I do not, and I wish I did.
Okay, well, we can put that in the notes for the Katherine Hickman.
I'm thinking along, for some reason, March 4th is popping up in my mind, but I know it's early in March.
Yeah, and it's usually a month-long show there, too. So right. Say March 4th to the end of March, Katherine Hickman Theater in Gulfport, Florida. Judith Villavicencio, thank you so much for coming and chatting with us about your trajectory and your amazing work. We're thrilled to have you here. So thank you.
It's been fun.
Thank you.
And I've enjoyed it.
And this is Brenda McMahon, and just if any of you are coming to Gulfport, Florida, Brenda McMahon Gallery, October 1st through October 31st, we have a brand new exhibition by abstract painter Sue Johnson. The exhibition is called Exploring the Unknown. It will run through the full month, and it's a wonderful show, and I also represent 24 other artists in the Tampa Bay region. So do come by. Thanks for listening, and have an artful day.